Van der Gijk, who drives it through.
We hit the high notes on the park. That's how we became a great team together, you know. It was just unfortunate, we never won anything.
Men's in trouble, there's the kick! The super sub has done it again! And Motherwell are back in front.
Without supporters, you cannot play a game. They are a very, very important part of the club.
Jukovic on the chase, might get there. Handel is with it. Jukovic!
I remember it to this day. It was unbelievable, and that's another reason I love going back to Fir Park, because you do get to interact with the supporters again, who were wonderful for me.
Chance here for Motherwell. This is Pettigrew, outnumbered though. Still has it. Chance of a lifetime for Pettigrew, and it is there!
Yeah, obviously, being on the podcast is everything I've dreamed of.
Goes through the middle though, Marvin Johnson. Defenders backing off. Took a deflection! And it goes! Misjudged by Bell! Fir Park! Twisting! Shouting! Shaking!
Hello and welcome to the MFC podcast. Tonight myself, Jane Buster, delighted to welcome along the interim vice chairman of the Welsh Society, Douglas Dickey. Douglas, thanks for joining us.
No problem, Andy, Jay and Buster. No problem.
Well, another podcast and we get to reflect on yet another brilliant result for the team. A 2-1 victory up at Inverness, leaving us fourth in the table. It's been a fantastic run. And Jay, I suppose we got carried away a few times earlier on in the season, but this is pretty spectacular.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think we got carried away the first. We went on that wee run under McGee, I think the tail end of last year, and we started getting carried away. We started talking about pushing on to the top six in Europe. I think you even had a wee flutter with the idea of us getting to a cup final at one point. But I think things kind of went downhill after Tynecastle. We had a really poor few weeks, and I think that kind of taught us a lesson. So the last few weeks, we've been quietly confident, I think, on here. A few times we've kind of said about not getting carried away, getting into the next game. But I think going up to Inverness, getting such a good victory, not that, you know, it wasn't, not that we weren't confident we would do so, given the form we've been in, but to get up there and get such a vital win, to now be getting into a home game against Celtic, knowing that any kind of result will guarantee top six in terms of our own, you know, of it being in our own hands, but also the fact that, you know, it would take a couple of freak results for us not to be in the top six now, I think. So to be in this position compared to where we were in when Mark McGee first came in, there's a lot of personal opinions about Mark McGee, myself included. I hold my hands up to that. But in terms of what he's done as manager since he's came in, I don't think you can fault it in the slightest. There are moments that you can criticise and moments that you can question, but to take the team that was in 11th when he first came and take us to 4th where we currently are, if that continues, if we get to the end of the season and we're still in 4th place, then I think Mark McGee would be manager of the year for me.
Buster, it's an interesting point. Mark McGee perhaps rightfully took a fair bit of criticism when the chips were down, but he's picked up the team, manager of the month for March, and he deserves all the praise that's been lavished upon him in the last couple of days.
Yeah, he certainly does. And as you said, you know, he's manager of the month for the second time this season in a short spell he's been here. It's the second second run of results that he's got us on. Granted, there was a pretty poor run in the middle and between them. But, you know, like Jay says, do you even think that, you know, we're basically in the top six compared to where we were when we played Kilmarnock or, you know, whatever it was a couple of weeks ago, seven, eight weeks ago? It's pretty unreal. I think, as Jay says, you know, we'll be playing on Saturday for, you know, against Celtic. But I think, to be honest with you, I think with the way the results will probably go tonight, we'll be guaranteed top six. So it's very tight, you know, amongst the middle of the league. So I don't see why we can't, you know, push for fourth, basically.
Douglas, the manager came in and it perhaps divided the support, the decision to bring Mark McGee back. But I suppose now at this situation and given the success, you'll feel vindicated by the decision to
Well, I think obviously, like anything else, it would take a low mark was here previously. I think it takes time to settle at any club or whatever. Obviously, it was a fairly quick appointment after, you know, Ian Barraclough left. But I think, yeah, apart from the wobble in the middle, as we say, he's been great. And I think the achievement on Saturday, I was up at Inverness myself on Saturday, and it was a fantastic result because we've all been there the last few weeks where we've been beaten in the 91st, 92nd minute and what have you. And to have that on our side this time was just fabulous. And I thought the way Marvin took his goal was, I was ready for a lob over the bar. But the way he took his goal was great, and I think he said that he was running out of legs at the time, so he just slipped under. I think Mark's got a bit in the paper again today with his manager of the month, but I think what he was saying was part of that sort of turning point was after the Kilmarnock game, just as you mentioned, Andy, that he'd actually phoned a number of the players on the Saturday night and took a sort of responsibility for the result, you know, and I think that obviously is a measure and also must be a spur for the players to, you know, to have that as well. And I think that shows a bit of a mark, pardon the pun, but I think that shows, you know.
No, absolutely.
It's part of his character, anyway, that he's willing to, even on Saturday, just tell me to be quiet, by the way, but even on Saturday, he said that we probably weren't worth our win, if you like, but take results any day of the week like that. And I thought the second half performance was pretty good.
How big a financial burden would finishing in the top six be? I know it perhaps wasn't in the budget at the start of the season, but
it'd be a massive help to us, Andy, and can't underestimate that. You're right, it wasn't in the budget. Budgets are done, and you've got to understand. Can I just go back a bit? You know, just obviously I've been involved now with Wales Society for maybe 18 months, and obviously more so involved since Christmas, since Brian left. It's a learning curve, but yeah, the budgets are done on certain assumptions, but certainly not on a top six assumption. So that'd be fabulous. And it's a massive financial contribution. Doesn't obviously solve all the issues that every club has, but it's a massive.
And I suppose pushing towards fan ownership and getting the fans involved when the results are going well, that makes a big difference to getting people involved and getting people interacting.
I think about it, and it's all about football. It is all about football. I mean, I've supported the club since late 60s, and, you know, my father was involved there, you know, for a number of years, 30-odd years he was down here at the club. So I've seen it, and I've lived with it. I've been all the games and what have you, and it does come down to football, and you know how you feel yourself on a Saturday night. It can ruin a Saturday night, it can ruin a weekend, it can ruin a Monday morning. Whatever, and that's what it's about. It's about the feel good and seeing the club just thrive, and that's, I think, this is basic as that. And I know even from the commercial side of the club or whatever, when they're trying to maybe push certain initiatives, whatever, there is certainly a downturn of perhaps not pushing as much on a Monday, Tuesday after a result, you know, at the weekend, or a bad result at the weekend, rather than push through. But you know, everybody's got their ups and downs, and I think, you know, we've got to live with that. We're Motherwell supporters after all, so that's it makes a massive difference.
Douglas was talking about the goal, Jay, the winning goal. Lionel Ainsworth's one was definitely goal of the season, we already know that. But the breakaway for the winning goal was fantastic. It's a goal like you don't quite often see Motherwell score. It was pacey, it was opportunistic. I don't know what Vaughan Williams and Inverness goal was doing, rushing that far off his line, but Marvin Johnson took it fantastically well, and I must admit I felt a fair degree of jealousy towards those behind the goal watching back the highlights.
I agree completely with what Douglas was saying there. I think that when he went through on goal, and particularly you're talking about the goalkeeper coming out, I wouldn't be surprised if that was part of the plan. You know, come out, narrow the angle as quickly as possible and actually put that idea in his head in the hope that he ends up skying it. There's great composure by Marvin Johnson, and I think we've been critical of him at times this season, but I think he has been really important to what we've done. In the last few weeks, we've done, you know, our form. It's no coincidence that our great form has coincided with players like Marvin Johnson really doing well on the park. So it was great to see him get the winner. And you mentioned Lionel Ainsworth, his goal, as ridiculous as a goal as it was, he's had quite a tough few months since Mark McGee came in, particularly after that Partick Thistle game. So it's good to see him in the score sheet. Great to see, obviously, Marvin Johnson getting the winner. And you're right, it was that kind of goal that I think we should probably score more goals like that, particularly if we've got the likes of Johnson and Ainsworth on the park, guys with a lot of pace. We don't tend to score as many goals like that as I think we should. And it was great to do so, because maybe that's what played in our favour. Maybe Inverness Cali didn't quite recognise the threat was there, and that allowed us to capitalise on it. So it was a great finish to the game, and it's looking like a great finish to the season.
We're going to go on and talk about the Welsh society in more detail with Douglas just in a wee minute, but I think we'll preview the Celtic game first and foremost. I've already recorded a bit before Paul Thompson, a Celtic blogger, podcaster, headed off to Dens Park for their game against Dundee tonight. We'll slot that in somewhere, Jay, but it's a big game, but a game where I would say a bit of the pressure's off our boys, particularly given that we've built up that points total that you would never have envisaged we would have got to. Yes, there's still the lure of Europe. There's maybe a wee bit of work to be done in terms of securing the top six spot, but we can go into this one playing against the champions with a wee bit of weight off our shoulders and maybe go out and express ourselves. We've already beaten Celtic at their place this season, so why not repeat the feat at Fir Park?
Absolutely. Everything, I think, is as perfect as it possibly could be going into this game. You talk about the game at Parkhead, you know, we've already been there, we've already beaten them, we can take the confidence from that. We are in the best form in the league. It's championship type form. You know, Douglas touched upon the fact that Mark McGee saying that we probably didn't deserve to win in Inverness and yet we ground out a result. That's what title winning teams do. You know, we are in the kind of form at the moment that, you know, is championship form. It's just a shame that it's came too late. So there's no reason not to get into the game on Saturday and be confident they're getting a result. But as Buster said as well, you know, we're recording this relatively early on a Tuesday night, so by the time this goes out and by the time we take the field on Saturday, we may be in the top six, at which point there is no pressure on us whatsoever. Obviously, it would be nice to get a result. I think we're capable of it. I wouldn't want to write the game off completely and sort of say, ah, well, there's no pressure on us. I think that we've got that kind of form going that if we can get a result and we can continue that momentum, get into the top six, then that could prove invaluable getting into those last games. So I would like to think that we'll still go there with all the confidence and all the momentum we've got. And Celtic, aren't they that good? Yes, they're top of the league because they have a bigger budget, but it's not any more than that. They are not a particularly good team. They're dodgy at the back, and there's no reason why the way we are playing at the moment we can't get another victory against them.
Buster, my real point with the pressure being off is that we could perhaps play with a wee bit more freedom, and the guys that have been performing so well can put on a show with the game broadcast on the television. It's a real opportunity for some of these guys to sell themselves, albeit we don't really want them to go anywhere. But I think that's it. With Celtic trying to close out the league, and Aberdeen have stayed in their coattails very impressively, they'll be feeling it a wee bit. They'll not be relishing coming down on Saturday.
Yeah, I think you're right there. As you said, you know, it's maybe going to be a game where there is no sort of pressure for us to be in the, you know, trying to get into the top six. I say, I think that's, we're going to be settled later this evening. I don't think MD would really relish playing against our front three right now. You know, William Holt, there to bang in the goals. Marvin Johnson's quick, pacey, few assists recently, a few goals as well, actually. And we all know what Scott McDonald's like. So, the sort of, the link-up between the three of them, I think, would give any defence trouble, especially at the moment. It's, as you say, it's Celtic's game to lose, basically. You know, there is no real pressure on us, but I think as we go into the, you know, the final positions in the league, I think there's about 100 grand between each position. You know, so obviously the higher up we finish in the league, you know, the better it's going to be for the financial side of things as well. And as you says, you know, if one or two of these players, Marvin Johnson, William Holt, you know, even guys like Chrissy Cadden, whatever, can put on a show, you know, maybe just add a few zeros to their evaluation as well. Because, you know, that's basically what we're looking to do with these guys. Give them game time, let them play, and then move them on to some bigger and better, maybe.
Douglas, we had Keith Lasley on last week, and we said, or we mentioned Europa League football with a wee bit of a snigger in our voices, and I think Keith maybe would confess to being the same kind of thinking. It seemed like a bit of a pipe dream, but with every win, the opportunity becomes more realistic.
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, obviously, Dee and Buster are talking there, and I think playing Celtic on Saturday should hold no fears. We've done it before. We've been spoilers at a number of parties or whatever, so I think with the crowd here on Saturday, pressure, as you say, maybe off in terms of top six position, but we want to gain every point that we can and finish as high up the league as we can. Obviously, I mean, I thought the Aberdeen game, just get back in the football a wee bit, I thought the Aberdeen game, second half was fantastic. It felt a real atmosphere in here. Obviously, we brought 2,500 supporters down, but I thought Motherwell supporters were really up for it, and that was what I thought was great. You know, that second half performance was fabulous.
And I know we have touched on it, but the good feeling about the club, that can transcend onto the pitch, can't it? And that'll bring...
Of course it can. Of course it can, yeah. I think the players will feel that. You know, Matt feels that. The whole place is lifted. You know that. But I thought the Aberdeen game was great. But no, go back to the Celtic game, definitely. Hold no fears. I think they'll be the ones under pressure, depending on results tonight again. Because Aberdeen, as you say, have kept their coattails. So until they've actually done it, the storm was driving over tonight. They were talking the radio. That saying by you know, 2:15 on Saturday, it could be all over. But hey ho, you know, when's that? You know, we're here to, you know, consider ourselves and hopefully get a result. Definitely.
Johnson in, Molt scores 1-1 at Celtic Park. It's Louis Molt.
To help us preview Saturday's big game against Celtic, I'm joined by Celtic season ticket holder, Celtic blogger, podcaster, and a man of many other talents, Paul Thompson. Welcome along, pal.
And how you doing, mate?
Yeah, I'm doing.
Thanks very much for inviting me along to the away territory.
Well, the last time we had an away supporter on, it was the Aberdeen game, so I'm hoping that history can repeat itself.
So I'm there as a potential jinx. That's goodie. No, I look forward to that. Big game ahead for both of us on Saturday, so hopefully we can make it a good one. The two form teams in Scotland.
Yeah, well, that's that. Motherwell actually top form team in Scotland, and well, certainly in the Scottish top flight just now. Celtic have only picked up 1 point less from their last six games, so it's getting really to the nitty gritty stage of the season. Celtic now looking like they're moving towards that fifth successive title. It's not been straightforward this season, though.
No, absolutely not. It's not been particularly great at times, to be honest. But I think, you know, it's important to keep a sense of perspective. You know, you look at our record year on year, statistically, we're probably not that far off where we've been over the last 3 or 4 years, to be honest, in points totals and number of games won and number of games lost. I think the real issue here has been we've just lost so many stupid games and stupid goals, you know, defensive errors and just not playing particularly well, Andy. I mean, you've seen it. The two games we've played against Motherwell this year weren't particularly great from our perspective. One of them we got a result, one of them you did, and obviously with the away teams coming out on top both times, but we've just been pretty inconsistent, but still managed to pick up, with a few notable exceptions, pick up results all season. So I'm just hoping we can get to the end of the season now and make sure that we can go over the line. It's, you know, Aberdeen have chased us well, Hearts as well, you know, have been pretty tough at times, and yourselves and St Johnstone have caused bother as well. So it's not been that bad a season from a Scottish football perspective. From a Celtic perspective, it's been quite frustrating, but, you know, frustrating and sitting top of the league potentially with 7 points, it's not that bad a place.
Well, that's it's quite interesting. You've got a situation where Ronnie Dyla's heading towards a potential double this season. Would that be enough to save the manager's job? I know he's a figure very much like our manager just now that does divide opinions amongst the support.
He does. It's a tough one. I've got a lot of time for him as a person. I think he's been a particularly good ambassador for Celtic in his time here. But he, sometimes his lack of experience and lack of judgment comes over. I don't know how much it is down to the fact that English isn't his first language, but he sometimes just comes out with stuff that waves you cringing. The other thing, I guess, really is there's a perception amongst the fans that he's not particularly flexible in the way that he has his system set up. He likes to play football a certain way. He's talked that up a lot, but actually, when you look at performances, he's probably not delivered the football that we expected. And part of that's down to the fact that he's maybe not got the players to fit the system. But I'm a pragmatist. I think you build a system around the players you've got, as opposed to trying put square pegs into round holes. And I think sometimes he's done that this season. He's him and John Collins, the system prevails over the players that fit in our system. I don't know whether he'll survive or not, Andy, I'll be perfectly honest with you. There's a real school of thought that says it would be tough to sack a manager that won the double, but equally, you've got to look at our European performances in particular over the last 2 years and wonder if we really want to take that risk coming into the whatever qualifiers we're in, whether it's Europa League or Champions League qualifiers. By the time July comes, it could be a tough one.
And the failings in Europe, I suppose, are really what's been held against him by. I think the lights have been out for him quite a bit in the press as well.
The press, I don't want to turn this into a Celtic paranoia podcast by any means, but you'd be hard pushed to find a Celtic manager that's not had a hard time off the press in the last, certainly the last 20 years, sorry, post Billy McNeil. But I don't really pay that much attention to what the press say. I like to kind of see what I see with my own eyes and take that as the evidence. And we've definitely not moved forward any in the last couple of years since Lennon left, but we'd probably started to go backwards under Lennon anyway in a couple of years before that. And a lot of that's down to finance, and a lot of that's down to a bit of realism about the league that we're playing in. We've got some good teams playing in that league, but in European terms, we're not a European power, unfortunately, and it's going to be quite tough to either maintain where Celtic have been in the last few years in Europe, last two seasons accepted, or last three seasons accepted, actually, or look at how we can get back there. And, without being miserable about it, I think probably the important thing for Celtic's perspective, for the fans, is to at least appear to be competitive at European terms, when, basically do as well as we can in Europe. And I think the perception is under dialogue. We've not done that. I think we've, got some real regrets for the European campaigns last year and this year. We've got some real regrets from a couple of domestic cup campaigns as well. We've lost some really stupid cup games, some stupid league games as well, but we've managed to recover for those. But obviously, if you lose a semi-final against Ross County, it doesn't leave you in good shape.
We'll look at the game itself in just a wee second, but I suppose I can't go without mentioning the fact there is the Scottish Cup semi-final a week after our two teams meet.
That's direct terms, isn't it?
I'm busting the back teeth of hearing it already. Should be by the time we've actually put this podcast out, we might have the return of Rangers confirmed as well, which we're all looking forward to like a hole in the head. I suppose it's just one that you, from a Celtic point of view, I suppose all you want to do is win it and get it out the road.
Yeah, absolutely. Same as last year. We played them last year, and the game at Hampden was, stats will tell you it was 2-0, but anybody who was at the game or watched the game, it was just a complete gulf in class between the two sides. It's different this year. Rangers have improved this year, but I actually made a point last couple of times they've been on the telly, rather than sort of watch a blank screen as I would normally, I've actually flicked on and watched their highlights and watched some of it, and yeah, they're okay. Whether they're as good as Hearts were at this time last year is debatable, and we saw off Hearts quite comfortably in two cups last year and in a cup this year when they just come up. I think they really need it, the press really need it to be a big, huge equivalence on the day, but I'd be very surprised if Celtic didn't win the game quite comfortably, and I'm not meaning to sound arrogant by saying that. I just think it's no different to me as it would be with any Premiership team playing a championship team, whether they're kind of higher up in the league or not, I'd expect the Premiership team to win. You guys proved that last year in the playoffs. We're in a fairly similar situation, but we were largely written off before you'd even kicked a ball in the first leg, and you outclassed them over two games. There's a whole load of things can happen in a one-off cup game, of course, and I wouldn't be rash enough to you know, predict scores, etc. But I think if we play well in the day, it doesn't really matter how they play. But you know, there's certain things that could cost us. Refereeing's always an issue. Rangers could really raise their game. We could have a stinker. We've done that on plenty of occasions this season. But I'm just looking at it. If Celtic play the way we can play, and we play as we've played over the last maybe 3, 4, 5 weeks, where we've had a little bit of form, not been as bad defensively as we had been for a while before that, it should be pretty comfortable.
To the game on Saturday, and you'll be coming up against a Motherwell team that haven't been better for them for 18 months now. It's been a fantastic run under Mark McGee.
Yeah,
they did have a wee bit of a blip and around February, but we've come out on the other side, and I think anyone out with the Motherwell support must be fairly surprised to see that. Well, we're absolutely stunned, I must say, but they see Motherwell fourth in the league. It's inconceivable round about Christmas time or when Mark McGee took the job.
Yeah, I mean, he's you know, what's been looking, you know, what I've seen in Motherwell and the highlights, etc., in the last probably 2 months is it's as good as McGee can get, I think. I mean, he's done some brilliant stuff, and the team themselves are playing really, really well, playing good attacking football as well, from what I can see. You know, there's some really good players in there, and we certainly saw it in the way that, you know, the game in December went, where, you know, we'd actually played okay up to that point. Probably we'd had two or three games prior to that where we'd gone through a wee blip, but it'd sort of come into a decent run of form. And on the day, you know, Motherwell probably could have won that game even more comfortably than they did. I've got history with McGee. McGee was, when he was a Celtic player, was a guy that I met a couple of times at functions and actually kept in touch with for some charity stuff that I was doing at the time, and he was very, very, you know, very kind and good with his time, and I've sort of followed his managerial ups and downs, his career, with great interest. And he does sort of have, you know, that kind of divisive quality around him. There's certainly some division amongst the Celtic support. In fact, when he's been quoted before for the Celtic job, as you know, on a couple of occasions. But
himself, it must be said.
Me?
Normally by himself.
I think the Aberdeen fans have got a particular opinion about that. I remember his press conference when he just signed for them, and all he did was talk about Celtic. But no, I like McGee. I like his attitude to football. I think he's, yeah, he is a bit arrogant, and he does probably talk himself up a little bit, but I genuinely think he's got a lot of time for the club. And I think, you know, I read his comments earlier in the week there about, you know, he was quite humble and quite a lot of humility about, you know, probably if the form prior to this run that you're on had continued, he might have been looking at the sack rather than looking at the manager of the month, as he just achieved at the time. But that's what being a good manager is about. It's taking bad things and turning them into good things. And at the moment, you've just got to keep riding that. I mean, I think the way things work out, we played Dundee tonight, obviously, depending on when time this podcast comes out. But if we win tonight, I think that's you guys guaranteed top six, for example. So there's probably a step forward from where you thought you might have been when McGee first came in. You know, finishing top six and, you know, a good chance at a European place is a pretty good place to be for the, you know, probably the season that you had last year. You had a great season the season before, but last season was a very, very disappointing season for Motherwell. So to come off the back of that, where, you know, a year ago you were playing in the playoffs, and this year you're potentially looking at, you know, playing against or sort of challenging for a European place, that's got to be a good return on it.
Oh, well, that's absolutely it. I think there was one of the games that Mark McGee mentioned, the Kilmarnock defeat at Fir Park. And following that, we thought, that's us heading for the playoffs for the second year running.
Yeah.
And there was a bit of doubt over whether we could actually get out of the situation we were in. So to put a run of form like we have done over the last 5 or 6 weeks has been great to see. The stage where we were losing all these last-minute goals, and It was pretty demoralising to go and watch Motherwell, but...
Oh, I mean, totally understand that, but I mean, so I look back to, I guess, the results you were having earlier in the season compared to the experience I had. I mean, I only ever really see Motherwell you know, you didn't get a lot of live broadcast exposure as in common with probably 9 or 10 of the other Scottish teams in the top league. But what I had seen and what I obviously witnessed in the two games that I'd attended against Motherwell this year, you're probably a far better team than your league position was shown at the time. So there maybe is a case that, you know, that last 5-6 is great results. It's maybe that's it coming together, but it's a very open league. It's a very even league. You know, regardless of what your views on the grand scheme of Scottish football, you've got to look at the Premiership in the last 3, maybe 4 years, but certainly 3 years, and there's been some right kind of tight races in there. You know, top six, you know, the second and third has been battled out between, you know, you guys were involved in that a couple of years ago. This year it's Hearts and Aberdeen. Celtic kind of had their ups and downs over that time, and the bottom six has been very competitive as well. So, you know, it's not that bad a league. And the thing about it, how it divides up as well, you're only ever kind of 2 results away from a crisis. It's, you know, if you lose 2 or 3 results in a row, you can plummet into that bottom area quite quickly. But I think it's good what Motherwell have done at the moment. It's kind of stabilised and putting a wee bit of a smile back in people's faces compared to where it was earlier in the season. That's got to be good. And McGee's got to take credit for a big part of that.
Yeah, absolutely. There's not been a drastic change of personnel, so full credit to the manager. And I'm sure when our guys get together tonight, there will be a lot of praise for a man who is as divided as a jail.
He has maybe got a wee kind of thing in mind that if Dyla is going at the end of the season, and he is on form.
there we go, there it started.
I couldn't resist that one, sorry. No, I don't see that scenario coming up, but no, as I say, given McGee's due, he's in my experience, a very nice guy. He's had his ups and downs in management, but I think having Motherwell a good fit, I think he's probably killing him at a point where he needed to prove himself again as a manager after maybe a couple of difficult jobs, and the Aberdeen job in particular. He took a lot of stick for how that went. And it's, you know, if you guys are reaping the benefit of that just now, you know, coming off a season where you lost McCall, who'd been a good manager for a period of time, and then you went through that Barraclough experiment, which, you know, had its ups and downs, but probably didn't work out over the kind of year or so it happened. So getting somebody like McGee in with the experience he's got, and he knows the club very well, he knows the area well, knows the fans well, for your first spell well. So, you know, it's great to see it come together. Still hope we beat you.
Well, that's the final point. I watched Celtic's game against Hearts on Saturday, and the one real standout for me was the performance of Patrick Roberts, who is the type of player that the Scottish football fans will get excited about. He's very direct, exciting player, very unpredictable as well. I would say he's possibly considered a raw talent at this moment in time, but it certainly looks like he could be an asset. And the fact that you guys have got him for next season as well, that must fill you with confidence he could come on to a really good game.
I think you're right. I mean, he's only played maybe 4 games for us now, 4 or 5 games, but he came on Rugby Park 2 weeks ago before the international break, and we were, you know, struggling a bit at that point, but he gave us a bit of direction, a bit of, you know, a real bit of impetus in that game, and then Rogic came on and scored the wonder goal that won us it. But Saturday was good for him. I think the fact that it was his first start at Celtic Park, it was in comparative terms, it was a big crowd for us this season. I think it was about 49,000 or something there. Good atmosphere around the Hearts, made a real, he had a right good go at us as well, so it was quite an open game. And I think that was good for him because he was actually finding a lot of space to take the ball into. I watched the sports scene, Michael Stewart was quite perceptive of him actually. He said he didn't actually have a lot of the ball, but what he did was very, very high quality. And I think that's probably a good assessment. He did, in a typical winger way, drifted out of the game for a bit, but every time the ball came to him, you know, there was a lift around the crowd, and he seemed to get his, you know, get his head of steam up and go flying down the wing. He's a young boy, 18-year-old, but, you know, 18-year-old that's gone to fulfilling Man City for 12 million, so, you know, he can't possibly be a bad player. It's just a case of how we use him now. And, you know, we've had probably, you know, 4 or 5 years of the James Forrest experiment on the wing, and it's, you know, chalk and cheese in terms of the early indications what Roberts could bring us. You know, a bit of guile and a wee bit of, you know, cheekiness. Certainly, you maybe saw his first goal on Saturday, which was excellent. You know, it's almost not quite a sort of Coutinho or Messi level, but it was, you know, very inventive the way he, you know, first touch and just chipped it in the corner. So, you know, we've kind of gone 3 years of watching James Forrest try and beat people on the outside and run the ball out for a throw-in. So anything's an improvement on that for me. But I'm really looking forward to seeing Roberts play. And you made a good point about him being there for 18 months. I'm always a wee bit wary about taking loan players in and developing them and then sending them back to other clubs. You don't know how much benefit that's actually doing you in the long term, but getting them for 18 months at least gives us the opportunity to get them in ahead of whatever European campaign we're fighting next year, and also gives them a bit of experience playing in the domestic leagues and hopefully the cups as well if we make progress there. So yeah, looks a good player.
That's something that... it's quite strange to hear a Celtic fan say that you're almost getting quite used to these loan deals where guys are coming in and thinking the likes of Jason Dyer last year, I suppose Bayata and Jason Roberts. These guys have come in, they get built up and then they move back to the clubs, which is something the likes of ourselves, we experience on a season-by-season basis. We've got a fantastic goalkeeper just now on loan from Middlesbrough, but it's inevitable that he'll go back to Borough at the end of the season, and maybe he'll get moved on. Liam Grimshaw came from Manchester United and pressed for Motherwell, signed for Preston. And so it's guys that we'll never be able to have on a permanent basis almost.
I think that's maybe the way that, you know, there's maybe a good indicator of where the finances are in Scottish football. If you look at the Celtic model just now, Andy, with the loan signings, what we're kind of doing is, and you mentioned Dyer, which is a real good example, but there's been one or two before that that maybe were a wee bit more short-term, guys like Robbie Keane and people where we brought them in to fill a particular hole. And go back, Craig Bellamy, if you go back far enough, was a similar one, you know, for a six-month loan deal, etc. But the last couple of seasons, and also there's a kind of wee link-up with Man City that comes out of that, but we had Dyer for a year, and we had, well, we've now got Roberts for 18 months, and at the same time, as we've been bringing in players from the, you know, the cash rich player heavy leagues down south, we've actually been going the other way with our own players and getting guys like Liam Henderson and Anthony Stokes, obviously, and planting a name into the Championship, or indeed I think once or twice with other Premiership clubs as well. We've got Daniel Fisher up at St Johnstone, for example. So it seems to be a way that, you know, clubs that have got a lot of players like Celtic and, you know, that have got a lot of more expensive players like Man City or Chelsea, etc., it seems to be how they're managing their roster of players just now, rather than having them sitting waiting to, you know, get the odd development team game, getting them out, getting them playing regular football and hopefully getting the benefit of it. So we're doing that, trying to, you know, I guess bring our own players on with the likes of Liam Henderson and Daniel Fisher, but at the same time, you know, there is that risk that by bringing somebody else in, you end up leaving a big hole in your own team by the time they go back. That was certainly the experience with Jason Dyer. We became probably more reliant on Jason Dyer than we did on Virgil van Dijk. So when the two of them left at the same time, at the end of last season, start of this season, it left us with a big problem, because suddenly you're looking at bringing in new centre-halves, you're looking at the likes of, dare I say, Effie Ambrose getting a game.
I thought you might be,
but I'm kind of hoping I'm hoping I get a game before he does on Saturday. But no, it is. I think it kind of demonstrates where Scottish football has gone finance-wise.
Paul, thank you very much for your time today, mate. It's been
no problem, Andy. It's good to come on and nice to speak to you.
No problem at all, pal.
Right, all right.
Saturday, I hope you're...
All right, hopefully see you on Saturday. Hopefully see you, and I'll get a wave as we're leaving after the win.
Well, I was kind of hoping you were leaving at 2-0 down with a couple of minutes to go, but we'll... All the best, mate. Take care.
All right, take care. Cheers, mate.
And it's Malt to make it 2-1 Motherwell.
Well, Garner, we'll talk about the society in more depth, and I suppose it could be described as a whirlwind couple of weeks. It was, I don't know... to a board member of the society, if it came as such a surprise, Leslie's departure, but to a society member myself,
I
was very surprised.
I totally understand that, yeah. I think it has been a couple of 2 weeks whirlwind. Probably for us, it's maybe been more like 2 or 3 months, really, ever since just after Christmas. It was looking like that was going to happen, although, you know, it wasn't formally announced. So in our heads, we had that in the back of our mind, and all, and that really is why, and we might touch on it later or whatever, but that's really why we're in a bit of a limbo in terms of messages that we were trying to get out or want to put out or whatever, because we didn't actually know at that time if that was going to be a reality. But there has been some forward planning, and as I said before, the board members of the society have been invited to main board meetings. Obviously Brian was the chairman of the club. We've always been invited to football meetings, finance meetings, etc. So there has been a degree of an open book policy in terms of getting some sort of succession plan there, if you like, so you're not going totally blind. So we have been included in that respect, but yeah, it's been quite a time, and it still is quite a time. And I have to stress that obviously there's a lot of work going on in the background just now. The MOU has been signed, as you know. That's obviously triggered sort of legal negotiations, if you like, to develop that MOU for hopefully a transfer.
How difficult has it been, given the big names, shall we say, guys like Brian McCafferty, Les leaving,
yep,
during the course of the season, and that's been a season where you've also had to replace the manager of the football, yep, team as well. There's a lot of transition going on while the wheels still have to stay in
of
motion.
Of course they have. We've had, yeah, Brian, well, again, because of relationships and what have you, again, we knew Brian was probably going to leave a month or two prior to him leaving. So again, it wasn't, you know, there one day, gone the next. So we are a bit thin in the ground, I have to say, as far as the sort of board and is concerned, and we're looking at that, and we're looking at volunteers, and this is where hopefully the fans can really, really play their part. You know, I spent last summer down here with a group of volunteers doing phone campaigns and what have you. So it's these sort of things that will kick off again. So the volunteers are the main things, and the fans are the main things to really get behind us and help us do what we need to do to achieve this. But the club has been on a sort of stable footing. Les has always been there. He still is there for any, you know, input, advice, etc. He's still, right now, he's still the owner of the club, so he still is there. So that, from that point of view, there's been a stability. Jim McMahon, you know, is now chairman of the club. He's been an ever-present. Derek has been there up until, you know, a month or two ago. Again, he's been an ever-present for a number of years. So there's been a stability there that's allowed the club to progress. Mark was brought in pretty quickly, and again, because he knew the surroundings, I would assume that, not speaking for him, I would assume it was easier for him to sort of settle in, and he's, you know, he's been with Stuart McCall, he's the Scotland stuff, so he's been there.
Les was only at the club for 14, 15 months, yes, but it did make a hell of a big noise and a hell of a big impression.
Yes.
The one concern, well, there's quite a few concerns, okay, I would say, that collectively we've all got, but the spending through the summer months seemed to almost be at a dangerous level, where we were seeing guys coming in to replace guys that we already had on the books, and you saw maybe the effect of that in the January transfer window, when there was a few players moved on,
yes,
I assume for budget reasons, financial reasons?
For budget reasons, financial reasons, and also I would say from the playing side of things as well, just as you have said, probably not required at these particular times. So they still are. You know, we've still got Clarkson out and loan, we've still got a couple of Airdrie players out there, a couple of people out to Airdrie, and also Craig Moore down at Ayr. So, you know, they still are out on loan, and you know, we're still moving around in that respect.
Has that been a kind of an extra stress on this loan? I know Jay's got a few questions because we've had a lot of kind of dialogue about society missing the repayments of the initial loan to Les. Was there an extra strain put on it by the extra spending that was going on at the time?
Not particularly. I mean, obviously Les has invested in the club, and yes, some of it has gone on a player's budget, others have gone on setting up an infrastructure, and that's a positive thing. You know, setting up an infrastructure, he's got, you know, a scouting system he's set up, he's got the fitness coaches there, and what have you, he's got Mark's backroom staff. He's obviously Stephen Craigan in now with Keith Lasley helping him and what have you, and really the concentration now is on the youth development, and you can see that, you know, from the youth to the development squad right through to the, you know, to the first team, you know Hall and Caddis and what have you. So that, I think, is that obviously the way forward, and to be fair, that has always been sort of Les's strategy as well. It's maybe just taken a bit to get there in terms of where we found ourselves in the league and playing positions and what have you. So it hasn't necessarily put a strain on the loan. You know, Les is still here, you know, so he hasn't walked away because of any mystery payments or whatever. There's, you know, the club's still here and that's where we are. We are obviously negotiating just now on the MOU, and part of that is obviously you know, the structure going forward.
The legacy of Les's time, would you say, is possibly more behind the scenes than the changes? He came on the podcast right just over a year ago, okay, and he mentioned that he was quite taken aback by how poor the facilities were off the park in terms of being able to gauge the players' fitnesses and things like that. He seemed quite disappointed by it, but he's obviously come in and improved
that's true
that.
And I think nobody could hide that, because again, he, you know, what he's brought in terms of the fitness and what have you, it's reduced medical bills. I think there's about £120,000 of a reduction in the medical bills, and apart from medical bills, it's actually the players on the park, you know, rather than sitting, you know, on treatment tables or whatever. So from that point of view, you know, it's positive in that sense. We're looking at, you've seen these, you know, the GPS equipment the players wear now, or some of the clubs use, you know, for tracking and fitness, and we're trialling them as well. So it's all, you know, it's all to the footballing side, as I say, that we're trying to improve.
Well, just going to the kind of event side of the society, okay, and pushing it as an organisation. The Bugbear, and Jay might be wanting to come in at any okay point, feel free, pal. There has always been I wouldn't say a resentment, but a bit of disappointment that there's stages of dull silence, okay, it feels, between the society and communicating with the board, their members.
Right.
You see, we've paid them, we've invested, and we kind of like to feel more a part of it. I heard someone say the other week that they didn't feel any more of a part of the society than someone that hadn't paid in. And that was blamed on, I heard someone say it, it was Jay that said it.
There's silence here, but no.
Well, can I just come in on that? It was actually, in terms of the communication, I noticed earlier on, and it was me that said that. I think it's important to point out, I'm a Welsh Society member. I joined about 2012, I think, because I was enamoured, engaged, excited by the idea. I got an overdraft, used £300 I didn't actually have to join it because I wanted to be a part of it. So I definitely want to see it succeed. But I agree entirely with what Sparrow was saying there. I just wanted to go back. You said earlier about how the club had been quite accommodating with the society during your time with the society, and you talked about, you know, invites to financial meetings, an open book policy, and that the you know, the society is made to feel included by the club, and that kind of rung, you know, that kind of stood out for me a little bit, because I don't think that's something that could be said for the wider membership of the Welsh Society. I think the communication's always been incredibly poor, I think, from the very start. Obviously, long before you were a part of the Welsh society, so obviously I'm not suggesting you didn't do that in the early stages, but of course we're now at a stage where I think in the context of the Welsh society, the communication has perhaps improved recently. The Twitter is perhaps used a little more, there's a few more emails, but the actual content still isn't there. Tweets are regularly repeated. Emails are quite amateurish. I can't remember the last time I got an email that didn't have sort of the email template kind of repeated about 20 times at the bottom of the email, and there doesn't seem to be any other contact whatsoever. And even I noticed someone in Steelmen Online fairly recently talking about the fact that they've been a Welsh Society member for, you know, 4 or 5 years, have paid monthly vote whenever there's a vote for the board, and yet they have absolutely no idea about accounts with the Welsh Society. They've got no idea what's going on, and it just seems that for a model that is based almost entirely on communication, it's about the Welsh Society communicating with its members, and it's about the members communicating with the society about how it wants to proceed, and yet there doesn't seem to be any communication whatsoever. And it's not, you know, a bugbear of just me, it's not, you know, Sparrow obviously mentioned it, it's the same thing every time the conversation happens, whether it's in a pub, whether it's in Steelmen Online. The general consensus seems to be that the Welsh Society has just failed spectacularly when it comes to communication.
Okay, I hear what you say, Jay, and I think what you're saying is partly correct. We've got to take some responsibility for that. I think the model has changed 2 or 3 times, which hasn't helped in terms of what, you know, the society was set up as a one-off membership model, which then was changed to a pledging model and what have you. Then we get into this, Les came on board, because obviously the society was set up before Les came on board. So there's been, you talked about disruption and what have you earlier on, Andy, in terms of disruption within the club, that people are leaving, people are coming, people are going. I think we've obviously been affected by that as well, in terms of what's happened, you know, John Boyle going to, there was a transition there between John and whoever at the time. It was only when Les stepped in that John obviously was looking to pass the club on. But, I think we've suffered for that undoubtedly, and we're looking obviously to make improvements. And I hope you have seen some improvement in it. We have Craig Hughes, Craig works pretty hard for us. I think what we're trying to do now is get more integrated with the club in terms of their commercial involvement and our own commercial involvement. I sat down here last Tuesday, Wednesday with Keith and Craig, and you know, there's got to be a cross communication there, so as we are working towards.
No, it might sound like a very simplistic idea, but the Les was always talking about the facilities here, and he thought that we should be taking advantage of that. Last Tuesday night, Scotland are playing Denmark. Why are an organisation like the Society not having people up at the club and trying to engage them, but also just letting them have a few pints and watch the football on the telly? Yeah. But instead, you've got these two big bars closed, not making the club any money.
That's exactly what we're looking at. And again, we're talking about that at the last sort of budget meeting we had a couple of weeks ago, in terms of we've got to create Motherwell into a functioning facility or whatever for all. And for, I mean, last time I was down here was the 1991 Unite, where Ian Ferguson and Craig Patterson and what have you were down. And we've got to do, I know that was for that purpose, but we've got to do more of that. We're putting out a fan survey in the next week or so that'll go. Yes, it's been held back. That's something that we'd thought about, you know, quite some time ago. Supporters Direct and what have you have just put one out, I believe, but we didn't want again.
Cross wires,
yeah. So that's going out. We're organising a Q&A, and I know we've had them before, but I think it's obviously very worthwhile. Jay, you looked at that. You're talking about the AGM. Yes, there'll be, you know, there's an AGM due, undoubtedly. So we're just trying to get, our house in order again. You know, now that we have a clear path to ownership, it needs to work. you know, so that's we have been diverted. That's not an excuse, but I think volunteers, board members, and what have you, we need to coordinate that better in terms of responsibilities. Again, I think it should almost sort of mushroom from one, if you like. You know, if someone has responsibility, they got a team of volunteers. As I say, I worked with Alison Campbell, Megs, and a few others down here last summer, and we felt like a team. We felt like we were achieving something, and that's what's got to come back.
I think there's been a case in the past where volunteers almost get slightly taken for granted, though, isn't there? So you're hoping it is a case that you can build up a core of volunteers.
I hope, and I'm saying that in all honesty, because you know me, and I hope I didn't give that impression at all. But I felt we really did have a team together. Kenny McGregor, Megs, Gary Howe, and we advertised for volunteers, but hopefully they weren't. You know, we had a night out, actually. You know,
I was more kind of alluding to the fact that it always seems to be the same faces and the same people. So the objective has to be to grow these volunteers.
Of course, there is, because and you're thinking all we do is have meetings, but I think we really have moved, and I'm being positive about it. And I think and Jay's right, and I take the criticism on board because I can see the failings as well. But I think what we're trying to do, we had again another meeting, and I just put something out the other day to the rest of the members, just saying, like, that is your responsibility. We need to have you doing something, you do something, you do something, and then you are responsible for that. You go and engage with the volunteers and the fans, and as you say, you know, we're looking for volunteers for Saturday. You know, we try and have a presence at every home game. And so we're looking for volunteers to be, you know, in the stands and go around. So Craig's always looking for guys in that respect to help him. So we can't have too many volunteers.
Can I just jump in and ask? You were talking about the idea of the model having changed numerous times.
Yes.
That's interesting. It's interesting that you say that, because I think that's another maybe concern of a lot of fans that you read in Steelman Online or speak to in the pub. It's the idea of the goalposts being moved a lot. And I think, again, a lot of the problems I certainly have with society, the underlying problem with them all is always communication. So, okay. You know, there is talk about the idea of the goalposts being moved on a fairly regular basis. Okay. I think because that's happened, and because the model has changed numerous times, because the communication has been so poor, I think that a lot of people haven't really been able to keep a track of what exactly has changed. There's still a lot of questions from the past. I mean, I was talking to someone about the society recently about, you know, have you got any points or any questions I could maybe bring up on the podcast? And they said, well, when I joined the Welsh Society, the idea was John Boyle was going to gift these shares to the club, and yet Les Hutchison had to buy them. There seems to be a lot of confusion, a lot of mystery over how the model has changed over the time, what is still relevant, what is no longer relevant. And so would you now be in a position to kind of clarify exactly where we are in terms of the model?
The clarity is that we are under a negotiation with the owner, Les Hutchison, to have a transfer of his 76% shareholding to the society under certain terms, which, as I said earlier, are being currently negotiated from the MOU. So we are, and to make that happen, we need the fans' support in terms of their pledging support, their financial support, because if Les has decided one way or another that he's stepping down, he's going, so he has given us the opportunity to be the first SPFL club to be fan-owned. But if that doesn't happen, Les would have to look at other avenues, and whether that's selling on or whatever. You know, he's got to consider that. So the path is now clear. If we want this to happen, we've got to step up to the mark. So every penny that's pledged is the club's going forward. You know, if this transfer is successful, and we hope it is, but that's where it is. Every penny that comes from the society, because the society, you know, will own the football club.
So does that mean that for the transfer to be successful, targets will have to be met first? I think, again, one of the things that keeps cropping up, and one of the things that I think people are worried about and have concerns about, is the fact that from the very start of the Welsh Society, we have had, here are the targets, right, we've missed that one, here are the targets, right, we've missed that one. We're now in a situation where we don't appear to have met any of the targets, and yet fan ownership now appears to be implemented, which I think to a lot of people raises concerns. You know, how sustainable is it? Because surely the whole point about targets are to show that, you know, you work out what's sustainable, you set a target and then you meet it and then you carry on. So are we now in a position where targets will still need to be met for the transfer to be made, or are we going to carry on and hope that the targets are made afterwards? Because the latter of those two options is slightly Russian roulette.
Yeah, well, that's what we're currently working on just now, Jay, in terms of looking at, you know, the sustainability, you know, of the club going forward, and that's the work that is going on in terms of what we need to do. And we will basically let the fans know what we need to do. But again, we've got legal documents to go through, due diligence to go through and what have you, which all impacts on what Jay's bringing up there. So within the next few weeks, we will know our targets. But we've certainly got to hit bigger targets than we have done in the past. We talked about the 2,000 membership. There's no top line. You know, we don't want to set a target, if you know what I mean. You know, because we don't want to stop at 2,000. If we can get 3,000, if we can get whatever, you know, that's what we want to do. And that's the issue.
That sounds more to be the case that the Q&A is. It's going to be, and things like yourself coming on the podcast tonight, that helps clear up some of the questions that people have put to us and that we've got for you. But the Q&A will be massive to allay some of the fears that are currently existing. And I suppose when people start to speculate and worry about certain things, these things can grow to...
We would be custodians of the club. We'd be owners of the club. So I think it's our duty to... Because as Jay says, this is now happening or live, whereas... Okay, before, yeah, we talked about the John Boyle model and what have you, and we were building up a cash reserve. I think John's idea was we build up, you know, a value of $1.5 million that we would have to keep as a reserve to run the club through a number of seasons and be secure. That's where we are just now in terms of working through that model, because we would be owners, we've got to make sure it's sustainable in that respect, and it would be remiss of us not to do this.
So you would say that it's almost crucial that it happens in the next couple of weeks, that the society board can meet with the
I think the Q&A we were hopefully going to get done, and I'm saying hopefully, but we'd speak to Craig again, but he emailed me today, and this month effectively we were going to look at Q&A. Yes,
we've got the Fir Park alarm going off in the background at the moment, but we'll bash on and see if we can hopefully avoid being interrupted too much by that. Ah, there we go, that's that sorted. Jay,
can I just also just re-emphasise, sorry for jumping in there, Andy, that we wouldn't even be in this position had it not been for the fans and the Welsh Society members, because they've allowed this to happen, if you like, financially, because we've raised a substantial amount of money for a small club. I mean, we talk about the Harps model and different things. Yes, it's the Harps model, but it's a totally different...
A different set of scenarios as well.
And what have you. But I think and we want to emphasise the community aspect of it. The football club's a massive community corner in Murrell. That's why you're here tonight, I'm here tonight, Jay and Buster are here tonight, because we're all connected. And what would we do on a Saturday afternoon?
Absolutely.
You know, the, what we do, you know, it's been part of your, it's your, this might sound a wee bit emotional, but it's your life, it is, and you can go right through that and pick particular times in your, you know, your experiences, your life, that's what it's about.
No, absolutely. See, just bringing it back onto the football side, just a second, how much a difference Les is likely to be departing or to be stepping aside, okay, will it likely to have on, I know we're getting round to the time where we'll be negotiating new contracts for players, will we likely have to accept that budgets will be reduced, or can we maintain living at the level we are currently?
In terms of wage bills, I think, well, the contracts are going to be negotiated. I think that's what I can say. You know, it's going to be, you know, that's, you know, Mark is currently working on that. But again, until we know where you're finishing and what positions you have, and again, Jay alluded to it earlier. I mean, you know, the pipeline is the youth thing. We are a selling club, but it was either Jay or Buster, sorry, that said about Marvin Johnston and Lionel Lainworth and what have you, adding a few zeros around, but that's what it's about. So I remember, you know, and football is a totally different business. I know people would disagree with that, and Les would probably disagree with that when we say, but the predictability of it and the planning and budgeting of it is very, very difficult. You know, you can, within a minute, it could be worth £100,000 to you on a cup game or going forward, you know, the kick of a ball. So how do you budget for that? But that would be done whether Les is here or not. You know, it's not because Les is gone. You know, every club will go over.
That's always been a bugbear almost, the philosophy of developing young players and selling them on. That is a philosophy that hasn't really been achieved. Sean Hutchison leaving for nothing, yep. Jamie Murphy again, went for
that was time and contracts. Yep. It was time and the contracts, and okay, presumably you can't make guys go or whatever. You can't make somebody buy somebody, but you know it's that's certainly.
But the club almost missed the boat,
timing,
didn't they?
Correct. No, I think, you know, even going back to, you know, Scott McDonald going to Celtic, you know, that was one of the biggest sort of steals as well. You know, we have been the victim of that. In the past, I think we got a figure for Jamie Murphy moving on. You know, with his transfer between Sheffield and
Brighton, yeah.
And we got some money for Lee Evan going down to Leeds. But yeah, it's a bumpier. But that I think in Alan Burrows would probably be best to talk about it, but I think there's something now about sell-on clauses.
Yeah, I think there's sell-on clauses and kind of development fees.
Yeah,
but
you know how you used to be able to have a sell-on clause, you know, if it's sold twice or three times down the line. You can't do that now, whatever. I think these have all gone. But need to be clever in terms of what.
I suppose a key factor is then in getting these young players, the success of the team, getting to the Youth Cup final.
That's a massive,
identifying these young talents and making sure that they've got a solid contract, so when the time comes that they do perhaps attract attention and some money, they can be sold for.
Correct.
Jay, just before we wrap things up, I know Buster's get a bit of the lorgy, not having a curry this week.
Is that what happens?
The whole Keith Lasley podcast eating a curry last week.
I'm just a wee bit out this time,
Is there anything else you would like to pick up on? I know that we've got Douglas here, and it's a great opportunity to ask him the questions. He's answered so many very honestly and to the best of his ability, so got to thank him for that. But if you get anything else just before we wrap it up.
I think the other thing was just clarity on a particular decisions in the recent weeks. It's not supposed to be personal or anything like that, but of course, you know, yourself, Douglas, is now vice chairman of the society. I believe Jim McMahon's the chairman of the society. I'm not sure.
Jim McMahon's the chairman. Well, what's happening? Sorry, Jay, what's happening? I'm interim chairman of the Well Society.
Right.
We took that over from Brian. When Brian left, Tom and I nominated, stepped up, whatever, to do that. As far as the main club board is concerned, Jim McMahon is designated chairman. I'm vice chairman. Tom Feely is also on the main club board, as is Leanne Thomas, Les's daughter. She's been there, obviously, from when Les took over, and also Peter Kelly and Ian Reid are there as well.
So that's great. I think it's important to obviously get some sort of clarity on roles and things like that, because I think that particularly in recent statements, I was saying to Sparrow beforehand, when you go and read the statements, particularly the stories on the official website, because there is, you know, chairmen and vice chairmen of the club, chairmen and vice chairmen of society, sometimes the language used actually does make it quite quite confusing about who's doing what role. And the reason I was asking was because, you know, obviously yourself being interim chairman, I was just wondering what the plans were going forward with that, because obviously the selling point from the society is the kind of one member, one vote tagline. There's a lot of big decisions, I think, that maybe more, I think the rhetoric from a lot of Welsh Society members seems to be that they feel as though they should have been consulted more in certain situations. But of course, you know, I'm not a businessman, I don't know the ins and outs. We've had the Rangers thing, but other than that, there's not really been anything else. And I think that, you know, in terms of the new chairman, I think it's important that if the tagline is going to be one member, one vote, particularly if there's going to be an influx of new members, then, you know, that decision would need to be made sooner rather than later. And that's not slighting yourself. You very well might be the number one man for the job anyway. But I think, you know, when the tagline is one member, one vote, but you have a chairman that wasn't voted in for by the members, I think that, again, just adds to this feeling of being feeling of not actually being a part of it, this disconnect, this idea that you're only really worth your money and nothing else. You know, I certainly don't feel as though I've really been, you know, I've been able to provide or give anything more than the £300 I did at the start. It does feel at times as though it's a kind of build it and they will come mentality from the society, and that the targets and the money is a lot more important than making people feel involved.
Right, well, obviously I'm sorry that you feel that. I mean, certainly, Jay, you know, you're welcome again if, you know, to come along well, obviously we're going to have the Q&A first anyway, but to come along to any... We need to have the AGM as well. Obviously, I'm totally aware of that, and that's where, you know, we've had a couple of AGMs or whatever, which I have to say weren't particularly well, you know, attended or whatever, and that was a sort of open forum. But Jay, you're welcome along to our next board meeting to see what happens, where we are. Yes, I was co-opted onto the board. The board is basically four elected and three, that's in the constitution, four elected members and three co-opted members. I think we've got our elected members. I think I'm the only one that still remains as a co-opted member. But we need to, that's what I was saying to you earlier, we need to look at that in terms of getting more people on.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, I know that I can be quite critical at times, but I do accept the fact that I don't know the ins and outs, I'm not a businessman, but again, I am probably, I would imagine, quite close to the kind of the type of person that you need to be convincing. You know, I want the Welsh Society to succeed. I'd love nothing more than to be involved in, you know, fan ownership. But, you know, there's so much of it that seems to have failed for the last 5 years that, you know, I still need to be convinced. And I think there's a lot that are a lot of Motherwell fans in the same boat. And I think it's also worth saying that I have had, you know, conversations and emails and meetings with people who have been involved in the Welsh Society over the years. It's definitely something I'm keen to do. I'm certainly not just, you know, being snidey from the sidelines. I'm not just, you know, criticising from the kind of faceless podcast. I have had, you know, I had a meeting with Ryan not long after we did the podcast with him as well. So it's certainly something I have been around, but it just seems as though there is this kind of a disconnect or something that needs to be corrected. And then I think it's lies with communication. I think after communication, all the other things about, you know, goalposts being moved, the sustainability, all those things can kind of be addressed once you have good communication going both ways.
What, can I get your email address, or contact number or whatever, and we can have a chat anyway, but can I do that, yeah?
Yes, but I'll probably wait until the podcast finished.
No, of course, I never...
That's because it's...
I'm not used to it. Why? Why?
I'll sort that out as we as we leave for Park Broadway tonight.
Thanks, Jay.
Are you not going to use Jay at pornhub.com, though?
I've written that down.
Douglas, thank you very much.
Thank you for having me, and I think what I would say... Sorry, I'm going to ramble on for 2 minutes, but what I would say is... I'm happy to do these things, and I think hopefully this helps the communication. Totally committed to the cause, and that's, as a lot of people are, and we just need to make this work and go forward. But I'm happy to do this. I think we've had a bit of publicity anyway, sort of stuff. I did some for the Park Corner, and also Craig has been on TV, News STV. So hopefully we're building that up as well, and we're exploring lots of avenues where we can improve.
No, we certainly appreciate your time. And Jay, Buster, thank you very much as always, guys.
No worries, thanks very much, Douglas. As I said, no, very critical, but thanks very much for your answers.
No problem.
No, thanks very much. It's been a good listen, to be fair, aye.
Hopefully, yeah. Okay, thank you. Thanks for having me on.
You've been listening.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the MFC podcast. We'll be back next Monday. Until then, thank you and goodbye.